all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
And welcome back at 7:06 on this Wednesday, February 14th. It's Valentine's Day. Nice to have you along all across the Civic Media Radio Network where, let's see, we get our usual morning update from Rob out in Tigerton, who says, good morning, happy Valentine's Day. It's cloudy and 23, but despite the clouds, he reports a very beautiful and colorful sunrise. So we'll take that into our weather report here, which includes temperatures that have ticked up a degree since the last hour. 31 here in Chippewa Falls, Hayward's at 28, Park Falls 26, Wausau 27, Green Bay reporting 25. It's 30 in La Crosse, it's 27 in Rapids, 24 in Oshkosh. Madison's at 25. Waukesha is still the chilly spot at 19. And then for all the details on some snow that's on the way, looking resplendent in red is meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Brittany, happy Valentine's Day. Good morning.
Happy Valentine's Day. How are you guys?
Well, we're great. I have a red shirt. I just completely plumb forgot all about it.
So, I'm drinking coffee out of a coffee cup with tiny hearts on it.
You have to be festive.
Okay, my coffee mug has pictures of my grandkids, so I guess they're my little tiny Valentines. That's as close love. As I'm getting. I'm sorry. Yes, yeah. That is love. Thank you, Brittany.
You said I was your Valentine's for the next 2 hours.
Oh, that's right. Sorry, kids. Sorry. It's
put it it's down, Pat.
It's Greg for the next 52 minutes.
I love it.
Brittany, well, what about this snow? Where's it falling here?
Nowhere yet, but it is headed our way. So we're going to have a lovely day first. Temperatures super mild, back into the upper 40s, potentially into western parts of the state, of course, southwestern, mid-40s for the southern half, and then even some low 40s to upper 30s for the northern parts of the state today. So mild temperatures. We're starting off sunny down to the south. A lot of clouds, though, up to the Northwoods. We will see clouds increasing as we go through our day today as, yes, that storm heads our way. So winter weather advisories are issued. They go into effect at 9 o'clock tonight or midnight tonight. Depends where you live in the state. So this is going to be an overnight event. As this pushes through, we'll see about 2 to 4 inches of snowfall for a majority of us. Now, some areas we could see near 5 or potentially 6 inches of snow where this heavy snow band sets up. Now, it's not just going to be one heavy snow band. It looks like there wants to be two of them. Right now, it looks like from right around Mankato, Minnesota, up towards Wausau, looks to be one of the heavier snow band potentially. And then also Madison to maybe Waukesha. But that one's a little iffy because of the fact that your temperatures are going to get so warm as the system pushes in and you might see a lot more rain rather than snow. So that key hour of when it flips over really matters. So the flip mix, right, because we're going to see some rain start to push in around 6 o'clock this evening and towards Eau Claire. It'll flip to a mix around 8 p.m. and then flip to all snow after 9 o'clock. In towards the Wausau area, same story. It looks like a little bit of rain or wintry mix hits at 8 and then flips to all snow after 9. And Milwaukee looks like rain arriving around midnight and then flipping to a mix around 3 or 4 in the morning and maybe potentially snow early tomorrow morning. So it's going to be a little bit of all over the place for statewide. But overall, 1 to 3 for sure, some areas getting around 5 to maybe 6 inches.
Depending on the flip mix. I like this. New weather term.
That's your new rap name, Brittany. Flip mix. Merlot.
Flip mix. Oh. All right. I'll take it.
Totally works. The problem with having somebody as funny as Greg here is that when you mentioned the snow is going to fall in Waukesha, Milwaukee area, he was taking a drink out of his water bottle. And of course, I'm expecting when I hear Waukesha to see a spit take. And then I'm remembering, no, he's working around delicate equipment. He is not setting up to make us laugh. He's actually just taking a drink of water. Sometimes that's what people do. But when you mentioned the Waukesha thing, I fully expected him to go there.
Hey, Pat, I have a question for you. Am I a clown? Am I here for your amusement? I'm here to make you laugh?
I think you're here to make everyone laugh.
That's true.
I was going to say, the answer is
my
only
discernible talent.
Yeah. Answers no, yes, yes, and yes. And we love you for it. Brittany, thank you so much. Have a great
day.
And you'll keep tracking everything for us along the day. We appreciate it very much. Well, Greg, I did try
to make
up.
What's that breathing for? What's that? That belabored. What's going on, buddy? Oh.
I tried. Oh. I tried to make up for my gift-giving faux pas.
Oh, no.
Is that an old man word, or is that just
pretentious? It's a romantic day, and I think I know where you're going, so.
Okay, there we go. By the way, Robin Tigerton tells us that it will be a wet snow, and be careful shoveling. So thank you for the words of caution there, Rob. We appreciate it very much. Anyway, back to our story. So I thought the light-up shoe fiasco, where I tried to get Sherry, because she, you know, again, despite being a woman of her age, sees the kids in these little light-up shoes, and she's always said, I wish they made those for women. And so I've looked around online. I thought I purchased some once. I was wrong.
What was it again? What did you purchase? They were
just brightly painted.
Gotcha.
To almost look like they had little glowy lights along the bottom. And the other websites where I could find them, you know, always like, oh, out of stock, not available.
Yeah.
So yesterday I hit not one but two shoe stores in the Eau Claire area thinking just maybe there's something there. And in both cases, really nice staffers at both stores looked at me like I had another head growing out the side of my neck or something, or for whatever reason just gave me this look like, you are crazy. There's no such thing. Can I interest you in something else?
This man owns a crawl space.
At store number one, I said, no, thank you very much. And at store number two, I said, yeah, what else you got? So I did eventually pick up something else for her. And I think that she'll like them very much. But I have, this brings an end.
For adults.
Now, don't go looking. I've spent a lot of time on this. And if anybody else does find them, I'm going to feel bad. So
yeah,
just leave me believing that they just aren't out there. I did have the one woman asked, you know, what's her size? Maybe she can fit into, maybe they make kids' shoes in a larger size, but it wasn't meant to be.
What size does she wear?
She wears an 8.
I am looking.
Which kind of surprises me.
I'm looking at some cool high tops, light up shoes, size 8 for women.
I don't think she'd wear high tops, but I would almost be willing to. Okay. Well, anyway, send those to a post office box. No, don't. We'll just talk about that later on.
Okay.
So I gave it a go, but then my phone started buzzing with work things, and I knew I had to get back to work, so did not even have time to stop for a card or flowers. I just had the other gift that I bought for her, and because she's working tonight, last night I just kind of was like, here, and then she kind of was like, here's yours, and yeah, you're just highly romantic.
Yeah.
Like, here, I got you something. Yeah, right back at you. So there you go.
I mean, do you want to know the extent of Valentine's for Bridget and myself?
What?
I woke up this morning, I came downstairs to the dog, pet me, and Bridget just was laying on the couch, and she goes, Happy Valentine's Day. I go, Happy Valentine's Day. That's it.
Yeah.
That's all.
That is real love.
Yep.
When you don't have to go through all the big grand gestures.
Yeah.
That's what I tell myself.
And then I gave her light up shoes.
Yeah. Oh, how dare you? How dare you, sir? Let's check sports at 7:15 right now. The Milwaukee Bucks could not reach 100 points last night against Miami while giving up plenty more than that, losing at home 123-97. Chris Middleton missed a fourth straight game with a sprained left ankle. Giannis Antetokounmpo had 23 points. The Bucks' next play tomorrow at Memphis. The 20th-ranked Badger men's basketball team snapped their four-game losing streak, beating Ohio State last night 62-54. They next play Saturday at Iowa. The fourth-ranked Marquette men's basketball team now has an 8-game winning streak going. After defeating Butler last night 78-72, they now take on the number one-ranked team in the country on Saturday when they travel to UConn. The Marquette women won at DePaul last night 69-58, and they will next host Seton Hall next Tuesday. It is Ash Wednesday today, as well as Valentine's Day. One of those, you know, coincidental holiday things, because Valentine's Day is always on the 14th, whereas Ash Wednesday is not a fixed date. Its timing is tied to Easter Sunday, which this year is on March 31st. And based on one news story I'm reading here, as they, we ever wonder, how do they set Easter? It swings between March 22nd and April 25th, based on a calendar calculation involving the moon. According to the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, Easter is celebrated on the first Sunday after the Paschal full moon, which is the first full moon occurring either on or after the spring equinox of March 21st. To find the date for Ash Wednesday, go back 6 weeks, which leads to the first Sunday of Lent, and 4 days before that is Ash Wednesday, which happens to be on February 14th. Now, not all Christians observe Ash Wednesday. For those who do, they typically attend a church service where a priest or another minister draws a cross of ashes on their forehead, meant to underscore human mortality, among other things. The ashes typically come from palms that were used on Palm Sunday. So if you ever wondered just what's behind that, and when you may see folks on TV today who have a little cross of ashes on their forehead, and if you weren't familiar with it, that's kind of the story behind that. There has been a death in the food industry of somebody who has a very familiar name, but you may not be crazy about his product, or maybe you are. Bill Post. You've heard of Post cereal. He was also instrumental in the creation of the Pop-Tart, and he has passed away at the age of 96. He was raised in Grand Rapids, one of seven children of Dutch immigrants, and while in high school, he began working at the at a Heckman biscuit company, which later became known as the Keebler Company. Later on, there was the opportunity to work with Kellogg's and create what has become the Pop-Tart. I know some people like them. I know other people liken them to shingles. So not the disease, the things that are on top of your house.
Oh, no, like the disease.
I'm not on Team Pop-Tart, so if I've offended anybody, sorry, but yeah. I'm more of a toaster strudel guy, till I looked and saw that those puppies have like 500 calories a piece, so maybe not so much.
And did that stop you?
Only for a day.
There we
at
go.
At best. Yeah. Live from Lake Wissota across the Civic Media Radio Network, this is Up North News Radio. It is Rob Thomas's birthday today. The former lead singer of Matchbox 20 is 52 years old today on this Valentine's Day. Greg was just sending me a note, and I was just about to agree with it. Among the many things that folks are talking about today is a change in lineup at a major radio station in Wisconsin, and some folks saying that their move away from many conservative hosts is drawn in part, motivated in part, by Civic Media and by the lineup here. I mean, after all, they now have Kristen Bry, who's going to be working for them, starting up a show there. And I just want to say what the same thing that I said in my Facebook post about it yesterday. Yeah, I think that Civic Media has had that kind of influence already, you know, 1 year into operation, as, you know, people look at the radio markets and say, you know, maybe we need more than just, you know, automated music and conservative talk radio. Maybe people are ready for Wisconsin talk on other issues and with a different point of view. And not even one that all the listeners will necessarily agree with, but just not the same old thing they've been hearing, Greg, for two generations on radio in hometowns all across Wisconsin. So, yeah, I would definitely think Civic Media should take credit for influencing how some other radio stations are moving.
We talked about that yesterday on the show, too. We actually asked the question on Jane's show, you know, do you think we're helping to influence the conversation? And specifically reached out to, you know, we have conservative listeners who aren't calling to yell at us. They're calling to talk to us and ask us questions and learn. And, you know, I don't think it's going to change their vote, but I'd rather have a conservative call us and say, hey, you know, this is what I think. What do you think? And then that's it. Like, it just high five and you realize, oh, yeah, we're not enemies.
And honestly, they like that. Yeah. I like having good conversations with my conservative-minded friends. Obviously, I love talking to my progressive friends, too. But we get into these things where it's clear we respect each other, even when we don't necessarily agree on how to see something. You know, I think the best example of that is the state having a $7 billion surplus, in that there's no one right answer. People who heard me talking in the last hour about, you know, how much of this should go toward government operations, people who paint the lines on the highways and teach our school kids and, you know, do meat inspections for food safety, that should get a significant share of it. Other people have said, well, a lot of this should go in tax cuts. And there's no one right answer, but those are great discussions to have about where is the best way to put our resources. And you can do that without the, you know, the gutter language and name calling that you have so often found on talk radio and basic cable.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't disagree with that. No, I do disagree. I do disagree with sending checks out to people with a surplus, but that's my opinion.
Yeah. And again, if it inspires those conversations with folks, then all the better. A couple of baseball notes here, because again, spring trading.
Yeah! It's coming. I have no idea what the Brewers are going to do. This whole whatever they're doing is confusing me, but yeah.
So we're going to get to the Brewers and pitching in just a second here, but I do want to say first on a serious note, I was so sad to see that one of my favorite baseball writers, Adam McKelvey for MLB.com, he's the Brewers beat writer. And he put up on social media that he was supposed to be flying down to Arizona for spring training, but woke up on January 31st with no vision in his left eye. Doctors had found a series of tears on his retina. He underwent surgery. The damage was worse than expected, so the recovery is going to be rather involved. It'll last at least a couple of months. He said it's been a scary time, but he's feeling very grateful for the brilliant doctors, nurses, and staff at Fraidert Eye Institute in Milwaukee who expect his vision to return with time. And so, again, he doesn't know me from Adam, but Adam doesn't know me, pun not intended. But I wish him well. I really enjoy his writing about the Brewers and about baseball overall, and wish him all the best as he recovers and gets back into covering things from the ballpark. Now, meanwhile, at the ballpark, Kurt Hogg of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel has an article in today's edition called Four Observations About the New Look Brewers Starting Rotation for 2024. And this is, again, where I'm going to keep things in perspective. I'm not going to say the sky is falling, but you know, we're also not going to sugarcoat this. This is a big, big deal to lose Corbin Burnes and Brandon Woodruff. And what do you do? Well, Freddie Peralta will assume the role of number one starter, he writes. Behind him at number two will be Wade Miley, who the Brewers re-signed in December. But then after that, I've heard of Colin Ray, but Jacob Junis, Tyson Ross, Aaron Ashby, D.L. Hall, Robert Gasser, Jansen Junk, Carlos Rodriguez, Jacob Mizorowski, Evan McKendry. Am I reading out of a phone book, or somewhere in there, are those the aces of the Brewers' future? And we don't know. We're going to have to watch how they do in spring training and then beyond. But, I mean, last season, Kurt writes that Burnes and Woodruff, you know, established themselves as two of the premier pitchers. They combined over 43 starts for an ERA of 3.11. And Kurt writes, needless to say, results like that don't just grow on trees. The Brewers also have to replace Adrian Hauser, who made 21 starts last year, and he's gone right now. So there's no direct replacement for losing that kind of production. But he writes, what they're trying to do is cobble together some relatively similar facsimile of the overall run prevention through some starting depth and a proven group of relievers. So this is going to take a little time to come together. And I have to come back to the notion of being a baseball fan, and a big baseball fan. I'm still going to watch the games. I love the games. We don't have to have 100 wins. It's always great when we do. But, you know, that is my sport of choice. So I'm not going to be down on this in this particular instance. Much like Jordan Love and the Packers, we are going to see how this all comes together and see if they've made some of the right moves or not. In our next segment, we're going to be talking to two school officials about it's referendum season. Some next week, some in April. And it's time for voters to once again be asked to go to the polls and decide on some referendums, but also on some school board races. And I won't have a lot of time to get into this right now, but wanted to note that the Appleton Post-Crescent has a note with the headline, "Partisan Politics from Republicans and Democrats Enters the Neenah School Board Race." And to let people know that, yes, this has always been a growing and continuing trend. These are officially nonpartisan races for school board and all the other local nonpartisan offices. But some candidates do make their values quite well known, and that's not a bad thing. And it's not illegal for Republican or Democratic local parties to get involved in these races. They've known that for years. It's somewhat unseemly, but it has become increasingly common. And I think, speaking on behalf of many nonpartisan school board candidates, they hope that you'll look past any party activity, Democratic or Republican, and try to judge them as individuals based on the kind of campaign they're running. And do be sure to vote on April 2nd. Okay, we'll get to those school officials out of Cumberland and Menominee coming up next. Welcome back to Up North News Radio on this Wednesday, February 14th, and welcome to Homeroom, our weekly segment on public education in Wisconsin and giving it the support that it needs to be as strong as it possibly can. I want to first, before bringing in our guests, just one more note on the topic I mentioned right before the break, and that was that in these nonpartisan school board elections, we are noticing more political involvement, often by county Democratic and Republican parties. And that's one thing, but at least you know who's participating. There's an increase in the amount of money coming into these races by outside entities with kind of shadowy names. You know, it might be the Main Street, We Love Our Schools and Kittens and Puppies group. And what they really want to do is burn all the books in the district. So I'd much rather know what the entities are that are taking part in these. So anytime you see a political ad of any type and it's a generic name, be sure you don't take those things at face value and do a little homework and find out what all they are saying. And with that, let's bring in our guests, Heather Dubois-Bornon from the Wisconsin Public Education Network, as well as Dr. Barry Rose, superintendent in the Cumberland School District, and Abe Smith, school board member for the school district for the Menominee area. Good morning to all of you. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
Heather, let me start with you. Just generally, just that general overview of school board races. And like I said right before the break, I'm sure that every one of these candidates would prefer that voters look at them just on their own as an individual and not what outside groups have to say. I know we can't guarantee that, but I wonder if you'd kind of echo that sentiment in how voters make their decisions on who to support in local school board races.
Yeah, thanks, Pat, and good morning, everyone. That's such a huge question for voters as they're trying to navigate who's running for school board. And I think your listeners are going to be shocked to hear this, but one thing that we've learned over the past couple of years is Wisconsin voters don't really like it when their school board races get super political. They don't like it when the political parties are overly involved in those decisions, and when the focus seems to shift away from what little local kids need to what political folks want. And so we have been just kind of following with great interest the degree to which people who are running on, you know, very narrow or extremist agendas tend to be defeated in their school board races, except where they're not, right? Where folks are running alone or unopposed, or they have campaigns that don't allow voters to really understand the truth about what the policy implications are of some of their positions. Sometimes those folks are getting elected, and in some places doing some strange governing once they are.
You know, we had a very good discussion about that in this segment a few weeks back, that it is often the candidates, if they are single issue candidates, whatever that single issue might be, tends to tell you they are not looking, they don't have a holistic, you know, all-encompassing view of the school district and of the kids and what they need. And that actually takes us into referendum season, that if people are focusing only on, say, the taxes issue and not the education issue, that might be rather telling, because these referenda are, for various reasons, all of them, you know, worthy, not wasteful when it comes to the kids, and for different reasons. In Cumberland, they're going for a capital referendum this month after a recurring operational referendum back in 2016. Menominee is going to be doing an operating referendum. And so we want to talk about both of those instances in this case. So let's start with Cumberland and Dr. Barry Rose, who's here, and tell us a bit more about the capital referendum that you're doing next week, you know, what it is, why you're deciding to do it.
Well, it's always interesting going to a referendum. I think we all know that I don't know that there's ever a good time to go to referendum, but in Cumberland, our bond referendum, you know, it is time. We have a 65-year-old building that we've got our use out of. We ran this referendum in 2021 and we failed by 174 votes. The difference there is during that referendum, we had an auditorium and an additional gymnasium. And we're coming back now in February of 24, for $32.95 million, just a little more than it was at the $32.5 million, and we're getting less. And I think that's one of the things that we're really trying to communicate with our community, is that this isn't going away, and I'm not sure how much longer we can continue to kick the can down the road. We understand that it comes with a cost. In an investment, so we've been very clear about that. But that's the challenges of running referendums. They're not easy, and I think we're just trying to do our best job to answer all the questions before they get asked. And so we're happy to this point with where our campaign is at. It might sound kind of odd, but we're excited. I think we do our due diligence on the backside. We want voters to be informed, and ultimately they'll go on February 20th and make that decision.
Now, Abe Smith, as far as the Menominee School Board and the operating referendum that you've got going on, I think that you're framing this perfectly, that, you know, the voters should understand this isn't something the school districts are doing wrong. This is, as Heather and I have discussed many times, this is a statewide issue. This is a statewide condition that local voters, district by district, need to address as needs arise. So tell us more about what you're asking voters about next week.
Sure, thank you. Yeah, so the Menominee Area School District, we're a little bit west of Eau Claire up in northwestern Wisconsin. So the district is asking for a $4.2 million operating referendum, recurring. And what that means is we're asking the voters to contribute that much more into the budget each year into the future. And this is quite a challenge to explain to voters, because the district has a history of being extremely responsible with finances. Our superintendent has been really great at getting the most out of every dollar. And so a lot of voters are saying, well, if you're so good with money, why do you need this extra, you know, this extra cash? But to explain that, you know, across the state, so far, 82% of districts have gone to operating referendum. And it's likely that this year that'll go into the high 90s, because we know that there's over, of the 421 districts in the state, there are over 90 that are already scheduled for operating referendum between February and April. And probably that total is going to go into the well over 100 by November. So in 2024, we're looking at a situation where almost every district in the state will be either asking for or already using an operating referendum. And that's entirely down to state budgetary decisions. There were decisions made going back, 20 years, but in particular, the last two budget cycles, where the state chose to make certain choices about the state budget, and those choices put the funding burden onto the localities.
And Heather, we have discussed this at length and have not been shy about saying why this is. Why is this a statewide issue? And it's because there is a legislature that's been under the same control for a dozen years. These are conscious choices to underfund these districts and force the school districts to look like bad guys going to the taxpayers.
Yeah, Abe got it exactly right. I mean, people are shocked when we show them the Fiscal Bureau documents that prove that Wisconsin hasn't produced a budget for public schools that kept pace with inflation just since the last year's spending, since 2009, a point at which we were already seeing districts struggling with and tightening their belts after years of revenue limits that had imposed spending limits on them by the state. And so there's so much about how we do school funding that's wrong in this state, that's not aligned with student needs, but rather has to do with tax values and really increases the gaps across our districts. We've been advocating for reform in how Wisconsin funds its public schools for a long time. But now what we're seeing is the fiscal cliffs that so many districts were warning us they were coming up against is here. And with, nearly 25% of districts potentially going to referenda in 1 year alone, I think that's a real wake-up call for the state that you can't just shift the burden to local taxpayers and expect schools to magically, kind of resolve problems that have been caused by the state for decades.
Right. And of course, anytime you're talking about asking people to raise their taxes, it's like talking about inflation. Even if you say that inflation has cooled, well, if there's any inflation, of course, then that takes a little bit more out of people's wallets. Well, in the case of Wisconsin, and this, in my view, didn't get nearly enough discussion when the Wisconsin Policy Forum at the start of the year noted that the tax burden in Wisconsin, the share of Wisconsinites' income that is paid in state and local taxes last year, is as low as it's ever been. It's at about 10%. It has been so much higher in the past, but people say, well, taxes are still hard, and Barry, you've got to go out there, and you can't say to people, well, your tax burden is the lowest it's ever been. They still feel like they don't want to pay more in taxes. That's an incredible messaging challenge for you or anybody in your position.
It is, and we've tried to do that as delicately as we can. But what we're really trying to, people, when they look at their tax statement, they typically look at the bottom number in the right corner and see how much it is. And what we've really tried to do is get them to look at their school tax. And for an example, we levied, I levied $7 million this year to our taxpayers. 10 years ago, I levied $7 million to our taxpayers. You can go back 20 years and it's less. So this notion of about, I keep paying more. I think the educational side of it is trying to get people to, and it's difficult to really understand their taxes, because as soon as they just hear referendum or they hear taxes, they figure it's everything has increased. But you start to break it down into jurisdictions. You start to break it down into assessed value versus, fair market value and those types of things. It can be confusing, but we've tried to do our best job to make them look at that to understand you're not paying any more right now in your school tax specifically than you were 10 years ago, but it's a hard sell.
And so, Abe, what is the message that you try to cut through and get to the voters out there when it comes to the taxes, but also to their district and the role the schools play in the Menominee area?
Yeah, I mean, like a lot of towns in Wisconsin, we're a fairly small town. We've got about 3,300 students in our district, and really emphasizing that the school is the center of the community, right? We've got, facilities that people use year round. We've got the events, the concerts, the art. This integration with the community is really what brings the community together. And what is a small town without an active school? Without that dynamic interaction between the whole population going through the school? So that small town pride, I think, goes a long way. And that's something that really has cut through a lot of these kind of detailed financial messages.
And Heather, finally, for people that want to learn, you know, a bit more about this, they can go to wisconsinnetwork.org and learn more.
Yeah, we're here to support folks who are trying to get the message across about what local kids need to voters and others in their community who are wondering how they can support strong, thriving public schools. We have resources to support your referenda effort or to help educate voters on who's running for school board. And we would love to have you attend any of our free workshops or events and let us know how we can help. We also invite you to follow us on social media and join us at the end of the month, the week of February 26th, in celebrating Public Schools Day. So Public Schools Week is an opportunity for us to celebrate all the great things that are going on in our public schools and shift the attention back to all of the reasons we can celebrate our kids and their educators.
Yeah, absolutely. Todd Alba is going to be in here for me next week and is going to talk all about the activities that are coming up as, you know, we celebrate public schools. And frankly, the best way to celebrate them is to continue to support them, to, you know, put credibility in the messages that are coming from leaders like Abe Smith, like Barry Rose, and like others, you know, with whom we trust this, you know, responsibility of making sure that our kids are educated. I've only got just a couple of seconds here for each of you, Barry. Are there any other events or forms in any quick way people can learn more about the Cumberland referendum?
Yeah, they can. They can go to our website. We've got QR codes out there. We've had all the community meetings. We do have another last chance opportunity to see our building on Sunday the 18th. It's an open house for parents. We have bouncy houses, childcare. We're really trying to get people in our building to see it. Beyond the shiny gym,
getting them involved. And Barry, very quickly, Abe,
SDMAonline.com. There's a great information site there.
That's perfect. So thankful for all that you do and hope that the community gets involved, asks questions, and show some real community pride for you guys next week. Abe Smith, Barry Rose, Heather Dubois-Bornon, thank you again very much. Great to talk to you all.
Thank you.
Thanks. Have a good day.
When we come back, Todd Alba will be here to tell us what's coming up on his show this afternoon on the Civic Media Radio Network. Here we go.
Can you feel that bass bass?
It was on this day in 2004 that Outkast got the number one song by bumping off a song from Outkast. Hey Ya had been the number one song for 9 weeks, but then this one, The Way You Move, pushed through after being at number two for 8 of those weeks. And I don't know that we've heard very much from Outkast since those. Andre put out a flute record.
Just recently, yeah. He put out an album. Okay. He got really big into like homemade flutes, like wooden flutes, and he put out a flute record. And some people were like, this is awful, and some people were like, this is genius.
All right. Well, good. It's not exactly the other songs, but, you know, we get what we get on the radio, okay? I'm not complaining. Who am I kidding? Yes, I am. Todd Alba is here. Mr. Alba, I know it's a couple days back here, but I wanted to chat with you about a couple of Super Bowl related things.
In honor of the dead, I broke up my Pop Tarts this morning. This was my favorite, but I do agree with Kreitlow, because this is why I have to lose 10 pounds. I also have my toaster stew.
Wow. The man loves his breakfast pastries.
Oh, I do. Anyway, I'm sorry.
I do too. Super Bowl. Super Bowl, let's do the political one first. When I saw that the independent group had run the old John F. Kennedy campaign ad from 1960, but put Robert Kennedy Jr. in there. Yeah, I was aghast. I'm looking at it going, you've got to be kidding. And I turned to Sherry and said, his family is about to go crazy on him. And they did.
And they did.
Right away. We're like, no. And he, quote unquote, apologized, but I believe he still has the ad pinned at the top of his Twitter account too.
Well, it's never good news when a presidential candidate, or as a supposed presidential candidate, has to apologize to his own family for an ad that he ran. Look, I mean, this whole Robert Kennedy Jr. Campaign is a sham. It ain't going anywhere. He's a goofball. I mean, it comes out now, I'm not sure if you saw the reporting, but it comes out now he was actually trying to get Trump to name him as his vice president. And yeah. even Donald Trump said, no, Robert Kennedy Jr. is too much for me.
It's too crazy for me. You're doing something wrong at that point. But again, a big-time vaccine denier, but it takes me to another Super Bowl ad, which I saw again this morning on one of the news programs, Pfizer. I will grant you, it's weird for me to talk up a big pharmaceutical company. I have a lot of issues with big pharmaceutical companies, but I'm in this case very glad that Pfizer was going big, not just kind of trying to hide, but being right up there up front. I think a lot of it because of the Travis Kelce doing their ads, being mocked by Aaron Rodgers, and Pfizer going, no, we're not standing down. We do good things. And so good on them.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, and certainly Big Pharma has issues and has problems, but you also cannot deny, or I think it's hard to deny, that we would not have been as successful in creating and distributing vaccines as efficiently as well as we did, particularly under the Biden administration, had it not been for the depth of experience and know-how and ability of places like Pfizer to get that done. And I think it's great that Travis Kelce is stepping out and saying, hey, it's cool to be vaccinated. So vaccinated
teams.
Shining
his trophy.
right. So, you know, the vaccinated teams are one and the unvaccinated nothing.
Yeah. Aaron Rodgers, not in the Super Bowl, Greg.
No.
Probably still sitting on his couch.
Yep, and that's fine.
However, ayahuasca ceremonies are going through the roof.
So. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so good on him. I am going, you know how sometimes you really hate something at first? We talked about this a week or two ago about Napoleon Dynamite, the movie.
Oh, yeah.
The first time I saw it, I'm like, this is the dumbest thing ever. And then by the second time, I was hooked.
Yep.
I'm wondering how I'm going to feel, because when I saw the Dunkin' Donuts thing the first time during the game, I was like, this is so dumb. But
no,
there's
not.
Plenty of other people that are loving on it that I'm like, I'm almost afraid to watch it again because I'm like, this is really good.
My sister and I were live texting each other during the Super Bowl and commenting on ads. And I was she was like, oh my God, that's great. I'm like, that was okay. I'm with you, Pat. But then I did go back and rewatch it. Here's the deal. Dial this up on the old WWW internet. There is like 4 minutes of
Ring
outtakes. four minutes of outtakes that never got played of Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, particularly of Affleck, that are hilarious.
Yeah.
And Matt Damon was on Colbert last night. I watched it talking about it. And the line at the end of that commercial, for those who have seen it, where Matt Damon says to Affleck, he goes, you know what I told you that I'd do anything for you? This is anything. That wasn't in the script.
Yeah.
Affleck actually said that to him at the end of filming, and they kept it in there.
And as far as I'm concerned, Damon is the one that saved that ad. I thought he was on fire. And that's actually, you put your finger right on it. It's not about going back and watching the commercial. I saw that note about the 4.5 minutes of outtakes. That's the one where I'm like, I'm going to click on this and I'm going to fall in love with it, aren't I? And I don't want to fall in love with something involving Ben Affleck and J-Lo and Tom Brady.
Treasure. Also, he's amazing.
Agree to disagree.
How do you like them doing this? I'm so sorry.
No, I agree on all those people, though, that Affleck is the one that I've always had a lot of respect for as an actor and just as a cool person. He has this great – they never talk about it, but he has this great organization called water.org that he's put a lot of money into of providing clean water wells all around the world, and he's put a lot of his own money into that.
Really quick, though, Napoleon Dynamite, and I know she's listening because she listens in on the drive-in, but Jane Mattenair hates that movie.
Really?
I almost walked out of the studio. I'm like, I have standards, okay? It's a genius movie. Oh. It's pure treasure.
Tell you what, we were with our daughters last weekend, and tater tots were part of one of the orders, you know, at dinner. Yes, of course. We're like, give me some of your tots.
No.
Not that. Our girls were teenagers at the time. And so they're like, oh, dad, you got to watch it again. And yeah, by the second or third time, I'm quoting the lines. But I've done that with several movies that they, you know, the most recent one was Step Brothers. Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly, right?
Yeah.
I went forever without seeing it, and I'd miss out on the references. And now, of course, all the time I'm pointing at something last weekend going, oh, look, there's room for activities. And they're like, yeah, Dad, welcome, welcome, you know, 20 years too late. But that's Dad with pop culture. Todd, only got a couple seconds left. The game itself, I thought started really slow, but actually was quite exciting.
One of the best Super Bowls I've seen by the end. Yep. I totally agree. Only the second time ever overtime in the Super Bowl. I was happy the Chiefs won. I predicted that along with Brady Ewing. So,
yeah, it was a conspiracy. Yeah.
Of course. So, yeah, it was fantastic.
A win for the Chiefs.
Did you say conspiracy? All right.
Todd's back. Todd's back at noon. I'm back at 6 a.m. tomorrow. Greg's back next with Matt and Air on Air. Have a wonderful Wednesday. Happy Valentine's Day. We'll see you tomorrow.
Happy Valentine's.